This is Thursday, May the 23rd, 2013, and Primetime Sports is on the air. It's Canada's number one sports talk presentation for 25 consecutive years on the Fan Radio Network and on Sportsnet in high definition. I'm Bob McCallum. That's John Shannon over there. A little bit later, Glenn Healy of HockeyNet in Canada will join us. And also David Branch, president of the Canadian Hockey League, commissioner of the Ontario Hockey League. We'll discuss a variety of things as the Memorial Cup is ongoing. Win or go home game tonight between Saskatoon and London, but also a Saskatoon Blades player, Dalton Thrower, suspended for the remainder of the tournament for a hit on a Portland Winterhawks forward, and we'll address that situation later. But first, one of our favorite people, the former general manager of the Toronto Blue Jays, special advisor to the Philadelphia Phillies Hall of Famer, Pat Gillick, is with us. Hello, Patrick. How are you?
Robert, how are you?
I'm good. Would it be under other circumstances? But unfortunately, it is not. For those of us who have been around this franchise since day one, the name Epi Guerrero was almost synonymous with the Toronto Blue Jays, and ultimately the arrival of specifically Dominican players, not just to Major League Baseball, but to the Toronto Blue Jays. Epi Guerrero passed away, and I wanted to give you the opportunity to... I knew him a little bit. He was around Toronto on occasion, but obviously he was somebody who was very close to you for a long period of time. Tell us about Epi.
Well, you know, the funny thing about it was that he played in the Braves chain for a period of time, but then later on in his career, before he came to early on in his career, before he came to the Blue Jays, I should say, he played in Quebec. They had a summer league in Quebec, so he actually played in Canada, you know, long before he came a scout. And I first ran into him in 67 on the recommendation of a fellow scout in Miami. And the first guy that we signed together was Cesar Cedeno with the Houston club. And then from there, you know, we worked for Houston, New York. And then finally he came over with in Toronto. And certainly he is the person that got our Latin American program off the ground. And as we talk about Tony Fernandez and Carlos Delgado, Damasco Garcia, Louis Leal, Kelvin Escobar, I mean, you could go on. There's over 40 players that he scouted and signed in the Major League Baseball. And, you know, he's a guy that always had a passion, a love for the game, but he also had a passion and love for Toronto and Canada. So, you know, it's certainly, I've known him well over 40 years, so it certainly, it wasn't unexpected. I had seen him about a month ago, and his health was not good at that time, and I talked to him a couple times this week, and so it always is a shock, but it was not unexpected.
Right. What was the synergy, what was the chain of events that led you to hire him? Was he one of your first hires? Was he somebody when you got the call and decided to come to Toronto, was he one of the first guys you looked to because you wanted to exploit's the wrong word, mine this talent base in the Dominican?
Yeah, he was absolutely, at that time, he has been really for the last 25 years, he's been the number one scout in Latin America, you know, be it Venezuela, Dominican, Colombia, Central America, Mexico. He's been the number one guy, and so we were very fortunate, Bob, going back there to 76 when we got the franchise going, and we had Bob Maddock and LaMacchia, Bob Engel, and Epi kind of came on board with us, and we kind of got this thing off the ground with that first expansion draft in November of 76. So those were the guys that were in on the ground floor, and I was thinking about it today, probably, you know, over at Old Exhibition Stadium, and you were certainly over there from the beginning. I mean, we probably only had 20 people in the
That's
whole
all.
Building,
yeah,
counting George Holm and the tickets and Beeston down there. So it was a small operation and a very close operation.
So, Pat, what did Epi do purely on, like, in the DR? What did he do that other scouts couldn't do?
You know what? There's some guys that scout and they don't sign players, and there's other guys who scout that do sign players. He had a very good instinct and feel for players. He knew what it took to be a player. And what was really kind of delicate about his situation is here you're signing players who have to make a tremendous adjustment coming from wherever it be, Latin America, the United States, and it's a new surroundings they're getting into. They don't speak English, and he really had to look at the players and kind of determine, you know, which player could make that adjustment, go to the United States, be away from, you know, home for a period of 6-7 months, adjust to the situation and be successful. So he had that instinct or that feel. There's, in any sport, I think there's some people that just have the feel and the gut feel and what it takes to be a player, and he was one of them.
With Pat Gillick, did the Blue Jays plant their flag first in the Dominican, or were the Dodgers there first?
The Dodgers were probably a little bit ahead of us, you know, in the Dominican, but, you know, once we got rolling, you know, I think we kind of surpassed the Dodgers in the Dominican. They certainly had two outstanding players. Pedro Martinez was one, Mariano Duncan, and then they had Pedro's brother also was a heck of a pitcher, you know, for the Dodgers. So they had some players, but once we got underway, I think we were neck and neck with them, you know, both in the Dominican and throughout Latin America.
So how just out of curiosity, how would it work? I mean, Epi goes on a mission, on a scouting mission, and the next thing you know, the phone rings, and he says, you know, I want you to come and look at somebody, or I've signed the guy.
We had a history, you know, going back through Houston and New York, and so I had a pretty good idea when he called me and he wanted to sign a player. I had a pretty good idea. You know, once in a while, I mean, we'd run into a guy that was going to take a lot of money. For instance, he called me and we went down and he wanted me to look at Carlos Delgado before we signed him. But usually, I'm looking through the list of players that he signed over the years, and other than Delgado, there might be a player on here that I saw in a workout or I went to see, but as far as him calling me and say, hey, look, I want you to take another look at him before I do something, I don't think there were the only player I can really recall was Carlos Delgado.
Was there one guy that he signed that maybe you weren't as convinced of that turned out to be the right move? Is one pop into mind?
Well, let me tell you, it wasn't really a signing. It was another situation, which at the time didn't seem like a big deal. But we had a player named Mike Sharpeson that we traded over to.
Sure.
We traded over to the Dodgers. And at the time, Gordy Ash and I were in the office, and I was talking to Fred Clair, the GM of the Dodgers. And I had a background on the two players we were interested in. One was Jose Offerman, and the other one was Juan Guzman. And I got all the information and the background from Epi before I even called Fred Clair. And we got into the discussion, and we didn't make the deal. And after we got off the call, Gordy said, I think you made a mistake. And I said, what do you mean? He said, I think you told Fred it was his choice of players. And I said, are you sure? And I said, I thought it was our choice of players, and we were going to take Offerman in the deal. And he said, no, I think, Pat, you said that it's his choice. So I called Fred back, and I said to Fred, you know, I'm sorry, I might have made a mistake. Gordy was sitting here with me. And I said, so we'll take Guzman in the deal. But, again, the information on both those players, because they were both young players at that time, came from Epi Guerrero. So, as we know, Guzman went on and had a few good years for us and was a key part of that 92 World Championship team.
I've never been to the Dominican, so I can only speak to this on a secondhand basis. But I am told that during those glory years, late 70s and into the certainly into the mid-80s and perhaps beyond, that there would be more Blue Jays hats, logos, paraphernalia in the Dominican by far than any other organization in Major League Baseball. Is that true?
It was crazy, Bob. It was absolutely crazy. No matter where you went in Santo Domingo or outside the capital, or you went to the went by a beach or went to a ballpark, I mean, there were Blue Jay hats, memorabilia all over the place. It was utterly fantastic. We had Tony Fernandez and we had Guzman.
Sure.
And we had, you know, other guys you forget, like Damaso Garcia, Domingo Ramos, Junior Felix, Nelson Liriano. All those players came out of the Dominican, and just to name a few. And certainly when they went back, they were sort of ambassadors for Toronto, ambassadors for the Blue Jays.
And so players in the Dominican, I would assume many of them would grow up aspiring not just to be baseball players, but be Toronto Blue Jays.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And that would have made your job, or Epi's job as it turned out, a little bit easier in signing them. I mean, because you guys were the... You were the Rolls Royce. You were the blue chip. You know, every kid wanted to play baseball, but his first choice would always be the Blue Jays, wouldn't it?
It would be, and I think this too. Unfortunately, I mean, going back, we still have in some parts of the United States, we still have some racism problems. I don't think we have those same problems in Canada. And I think one thing, there was a good feeling of our players coming to Canada. I think they felt at home there. I think they were treated well by the people in Canada, and consequently, they felt comfortable. I always thought that, that the Latin American players were very loyal players, and when it came to free agency, if you wanted to retain them, if you made a competitive offer, they would probably stay where they felt comfortable, and for the most part, I think most of the Latin American players felt comfortable in Toronto.
Did you have... When you were the GM and you were bringing these players in, specifically from the Dominican, did you feel a need to make sure that there was at least a group of them? Because I could recall many of these guys would come, we'd see them at Dunedin for the first time, and they couldn't speak barely a word of English. And I know you had translators and people around them to, even through their minor league careers, to help them acclimatize themselves to the North American culture. What was there a conscious effort on your part to say, you know, we can't just have one or two of these guys. We have to have a small group so that they feel more comfortable?
Well, absolutely. They're coming to a strange country, different customs, be it the United States or Canada, different ways of life that they've probably never experienced before. A lot of the young men come from very, poor backgrounds. And so consequently for them to have someone else around where they can ask a question or they can ask for some guidance, it's good to have, four or five people together and they can kind of put their heads together if there is a question that comes up. But, we did make an effort and, worked out well. Almost all the players we had, we never really had any sort of a off the field problem or discipline problem with any of them. They all adjusted quite well, and as I say, I think all of them had a very, very special place in their heart for Canada and for Toronto.
Pat, how much time would Epi spend around the big club?
He would come into spring training, and then he would probably come in once during the year. I don't know if you remember, Bob, this is a long time ago. It's over 30 years ago. But yeah. In 81, he was a coach for Bob Maddock.
Yep.
When Bob was the...
I do.
When Bob was the manager of the Blue Jays, he was a coach with Bobby at that time. So he spent about a half of the year here. But he would come in a couple times a year. But really... he really loved to be out with the kids, working with the kids, and so consequently, he'd visit all our minor league clubs to check on the prospects and check on some of his players, but then he would go back, Dominican, Venezuela, wherever it might be to look for more players. So, great guy, great employee, love for the game, passion for the game, and just it's unfortunate that it happens, but and it's going to happen to all of us, I guess.
Yeah, we're getting to that point, aren't we? Where our friends are starting to disappear. Can you even imagine or calculate how many bats, balls, gloves you guys sent to the Dominican and to the Caribbean in general?
I can't.
To be a program, right, where you guys would gather used baseball equipment and send it down there.
I can't tell you how much, but it was a tremendous amount. And the one thing that was wonderful from our standpoint, we had a real good support of ownership. Don McDougal, Howard Webster, Peter Woodrington, Mr. Hardy, Beast, and everybody. We had very good support for our program, down in the Dominican Republic, and they really understood what these young people were going for. Pardon me, going through from an adjustment standpoint. And so it really worked out for a very good partnership and a very good relationship, with the people from Latin America.
Was there a time when the Blue Jays lost their focus? They certainly lost their dominance, which probably was an inevitability because you guys were You know, you guys were getting the cream of the crop a lot of the time, and other organizations eventually realized that and started to move in. But was there a time during the Blue Jay history, either while you were there or after you left, where it would be accurate to say that the Blue Jays de-emphasized their involvement in the Dominican specifically?
Well, I can't say specifically, but...
Or was it just maybe the competition?
No, I think there was I think there was a bit of a for a period of time there was a bit of a de-emphasis, you know, on that area. My whole contention is that you if you're going to be really faithful to the fans, you've got to use every area, you've got to use every tool to try to build a club. I mean, we used the Rule 5 when I happened to be there for Gruber and Manny Lee and Bell and Jim Gott and people like that. And then you make trades, and then you have the amateur draft. And then the other area you have is Latin America, and now you have Europe. So if you're going to build a baseball team, I mean, you have to use every one of those areas. And I think you're kind of shortchanging the fans and the public if you don't use every possible area to build, you know, to build a club. And so consequently, I think there was a little de-emphasis you know, on Latin America, and anytime you just take, you know, you take a couple deep breaths and you let it go by, you're going to lose ground.
And Pat, you think Europe's a growing market?
Yeah, I think it's got possibilities. Right now, probably, John, the three you know, largest areas over there are Holland, Italy, and Germany. And Germany has really, you know, kind of come on in the last year or two. But those are three of the hottest areas right now. You know, they're playing baseball. They're placed in Spain and Czechoslovakia, et cetera. But really, Holland is probably number one, at least two, and Germany would be three.
We did. There was a documentary done here about a year ago. Greg Zahn did a documentary on baseball in Africa. Is Africa possibly the next place that scouts will start looking at, or is there another place that's kind of on your radar?
No, they've been going into South Africa. In fact, a fellow used to be with me in Baltimore. He's working for Seattle right now. He goes into South Africa quite regularly, and he's signed two or three players out of South Africa. So, you know, there are players, you know, down in that area. But I think eventually, you know, might not be in my lifetime, but I think probably later on that there will be some action in Africa for sure.
It is a sad day indeed as Epi Guerrero passes away at the age of 71. As I said off the top, I cannot claim to have known him well. I met him. I certainly saw him around, especially at spring training. And I can tell the audience that he was both loved and respected by the Blue Jay organization, and he'll be forever missed.
Yeah, I would say going back to those early years, Bob Maddock, Alamakia, Epi, Engel, we kind of got that thing off the ground in 76. And
yeah.
I was thinking today, you know, going to spring training in 1977, we had 41 players, and that was the organization, and one very many. Only had 16 reserves, so
yeah.
Nobody better get, you know, you better not get hurt, I'll tell you that.
And all of us stayed at the Ramada Inn Countryside. You remember that?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
The organization was small enough we could stay in literally one motel.
Now let me ask you a question. Now I was driving home the other night and listening, shut the radio off here in Seattle. It was 4-1, and the next thing I knew was 5-4. Have they recovered yet?
I think yes. The fan base has recovered, but
actually,
I don't think they'll ever forget.
Actually, Pat, the answer is no. They haven't recovered.
Okay,
and they never will.
They never will.
And it was only the first round.
Yeah, my son-in-law is a big Maple Leaf fan, lives in Detroit, and sits in front of it, watches the package, and has his blue Maple Leaf sweater on all the time. And I know that he was absolutely devastated. So
it was among the most unbelievable losses you could ever imagine, I can tell you that.
Yeah.
Mr. Gillick, always a pleasure.
Nice talking to you, John, and by the way, happy 25th. I know it's coming up.
Thank you, pal. We appreciate it. Maybe you'll come and see us. Pat Gillick, special advisor of the Philadelphia Phillies, the longtime general manager, two-time World Series champion with the Toronto Blue Jays. And again, our condolences to the family and friends of Epi Guerrero. And again, if you were a Blue Jay fan even back in those days, you probably knew the name because we talked about him a fair bit, and we talked about the kinds of players that he brought in, because the Blue Jays definitively had a Dominican flavor.
Oh yeah.
And it was almost the defining issue mm-hmm. for the Toronto Blue Jays. The issue that separated them from everybody else was not just that they had Dominican players, but that they really owned that marketplace.
Well, the fascination,
and it was because of Epi.
And the fascination for me is, and he died. He passed away at the age of 71. I always thought that in the late 80s and the early 90s, at their ultimate point, he was old then. For him to pass away at 71, you're going, well,
he was still really, a young man.
And making a huge impact in both countries, when you think about it. I mean, the stories of Epi going to the ballpark
he would have been in his early 30s when he was working for the Blue Jays.
Yeah. Yeah.
At the beginning.
Fascinating.
We'll take the break. When we come back, we'll switch gears onto hockey and the playoffs march on. Healy will join us to talk about it when Primetime continues on the Fan Radio Network and Sportsnet. Our Primetime continues on the Fan Radio Network and Sportsnet. Bob McCown with John Shannon. David Branch will join us in a little bit. But first, from Hockey Night in Canada, here's Glenn Healy. Hello, Heels.
Hello, gentlemen. How are we doing today?
We're okay, I think. Why, what'd you hear? Anything? Yeah.
How's Pittsburgh? No. How's Pittsburgh?
I've ever had this happen, but we've sat for a long, long time, a couple hours on the tarmac because there was lightning in Pittsburgh, and the ground crew would not come out to empty the bags off the aircraft. That's a first. I've never had that happen. However,
they were askeered.
And getting to Pittsburgh, you got to either go through Chicago, or you got to go through Washington, or you can go through Toronto. But there's like no direct routes from the nation's capital.
Well, not from Ottawa. No.
Not from Ottawa. Yeah.
No. It's this is a journey. I need a Sherpa, Johnny.
Yeah.
On board.
Yeah. I could probably carry your bags, Glenn.
There's no more dangerous exercise than to look at a series like this, look at a game four like we saw, and say, well, this is over. That's fool's gold, because we've all been around this game long enough to know that stupid stuff can happen. But it is really difficult for me to conjure up a scenario whereby the Ottawa Senators can come back in this series. Your thoughts?
Well, considering Pittsburgh has not lost three games in a row all year, and considering now not only do they have Malkin and Crosby going, but add to that list as of yesterday, James Neal, who played his best game, I thought, of a Penguin last night, and Jorm McGinley. So they have pretty much everything checked off with regards to what they've got going at the right time. Now, what you're hanging hope on is that Bylsma has never closed out a series since he's on home ice, since he's been a coach. He's 0-6. You've got Craig Anderson in net. And, you looked at that game last night. You said, hey, we're up 2-1 after one. We were only down 3-2 going into the third. We were there. We just let it slip through our fingers. And that's the hope you sell. But if you look at the team on paper, it's clearly a better team in Pittsburgh. And, that will to win has probably been taken away from some of the Sennies.
What did you make of Alfredson's comments?
Well, he said he was...
Let me paraphrase, just so you know. He was asked, I guess, what do you think your chances are now?
Not very good.
And he said, not very good, or something to that effect.
Yeah. I do know at the end of the game, we watched him go get the puck, and that was unusual, because does that tell you that he doesn't expect to get back on Sunday? Not quite sure what he was thinking there. But I can tell you that, it's an emotional game. He probably said it in kind of a sarcastic way, and they ran with it. But he's been the best player for the Senators next to Anderson. I can't believe he thinks they have no chance to win. But I would imagine if you polled them privately, there's quite a few of them that think they have a slim chance to win.
Let me ask you this. Have the Senators been physical enough in this series?
Yeah, they have. Yeah, they actually, most of the physical play has been their way. You know, almost 2-1 in hits in certain games.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, hit who? Like, if I can target one person, don't I have a reason to be? If I only have to go after Carlson, say, or Gonchar, or Spezza,
right.
Okay, that's perfect. So who are you going to hit on Pittsburgh? Is it Crosby you're going after?
Oh, no, I would have actually targeted the defenseman first. But
so, Letang, great.
Well,
you know, they've got... You know, it's just there's so many weapons,
Johnny. Yeah.
And here's the issue with Pittsburgh, and this is the hardest part when you play a team like them. You are so afraid to take a penalty. Because if you do, what a power play that they can put on the ice, and they've got their act together now. They've kind of figured out, okay, Iginla doesn't fit on our power play. We're going to play the guys that got us here. We're going to stick with Neil like they did last night.
Mm-hmm.
So you're almost you're on your heels. Because if you take a penalty, it's going to bite you in the rear end. And that's what I see from the Sennies. And you know, last game was a pretty good illustration of it. Game 3, the specialty teams war was won by Ottawa. Game 4, it was won by Pittsburgh.
Mm-hmm. The Toronto Maple Leafs went out in the first round, and in spite of the way they went out in the first round, mostly fans would be satisfied, I think are satisfied, with the result, overall result this year. Will Ottawa fans be satisfied if this team ultimately loses to Pittsburgh, whether it's in 5 games or 6?
Oh, yeah. You look at this team season. You look at, let's take a player like Pageau, for instance. Pageau could have gone back to junior this year.
Mm-hmm.
He probably, if he did go back to junior, would have played in the East Coast League. But for injuries to the NHL team, there was a whole busload of players that went from the AHL up to the NHL. So that opened up a spot for Pageau. He's a pretty good player. Their line's been the best line in this series for Ottawa. They've been really good. So there's some bright lights. Greiba, who probably wouldn't have played any power play time, any penalty kill time, he got to play in the minors. They have a bunch of guys coming. They are a good young team, and they remind me of, and people may think I'm nuts, but the way they play, a lot of it is like Detroit. They are a team that just dumps it in and gives up possession and waits to stand in a neutral zone to try to get it back to dump it back in again. They play with the puck. They have a puck possession team. McLean's a great coach. They've got a great goalie. They've got one of the best defensemen in the NHL. You know, if he didn't have the injury, I'm sure he would have. You know, this would have been a much different year for them.
Carlson.
There are a lot of positives with their team.
Well, no surprise that they are like the Red Wings with the pedigree of where Paul came from. So right. Now, I've got to bring this up. I don't like to embarrass you too many times. It was a week ago on
once or twice is okay, but not too many times.
It was a week ago on this show that the three of us were conversing.
Oh, that line. I can't hear you.
And you were saying that the Rangers are so deep, they could even put Brad Richards on the fourth line. Well, they're so deep, they don't even have to play him now.
Well, now you're finally talking some sense, Johnny. Oh, boy, this is a strange animal, isn't it? This is on the wheels are off the cart.
Holy
bring
smokes.
Bring in the Osbournes. Yep, bring in the Osbournes. They seem more functional than the Rangers right now. Wow, this is a hard pill to swallow. And, you know, when I heard Tortorella's comments with regards to Carl Hagelin, that he stinks on the power play. I mean, and then sitting out your golden boy who you paid all this money to, this just reeks of, I want out of here. And maybe it's just the Rangers, they played that shot blocking in your face style, and Tortorella has not been a pleasant soul for these guys. You know, maybe it's time for a change. But yeah, this is the strangest of strange. You know, you've got a power play that doesn't work, and your highest paid player, one of the highest in the league, sitting in the stands watching beside the general manager who signed him.
Where is
it's
Brad
Richards?
Does Brad Richards stay in New York? Would anybody take on his contract?
He's going to get bought out, Bob.
He's going to get bought out?
Yeah.
Well, no, you know, I will say this. This is a weird year. I don't know what some of the veterans did while they negotiated the 8 shovelers that they needed for the CBA. Okay? Some of them worked out. Some of them didn't. Some of them maybe have taken some extended vacations. I was in Atlantis with at least 4 of them. I watched 3 of the 4, never got on an exercise bike once. Okay, I'm not going to name who they are, but I get it. I was there in a lockout in 94, and it's hard to work out. So it's a strange year. Maybe this is one of those years where, okay, Brad, you get back to brass tacks in the summer, get back to your regular routine, you're going to start in September, and let's see where you're at. If I'm the Rangers, I would not compliance buy him out. If they're thinking of that, I wouldn't do it this summer. I would do it the following summer. I would wait and see what a regular year and a regular training period brings this athlete.
John doesn't
agree. Maybe if I'm changing my coach, what a new coach thinks of this player.
Yeah, I don't, you know, it's funny. As much as you think that Tortorella, they get swept, Tortorella's got to be on the hot seat. I don't see my friends say they're firing him. I really don't. That's not, you know Glenn as well as I do.
Time will tell.
No.
That's a coveted job, and there are some good people that could work in that position and love it. And one of them's in Phoenix while they wait to see if capitalism has finally spoke. And for the 57th straight year, no one wants to buy the Phoenix Coyotes. But Dave Tippett would be a great choice to coach any team that I have.
You obviously have been talking to the commissioner of the National Hockey League. They are lined up to buy the Phoenix Coyotes.
Yes, there was a
pay attention to the news releases. Yeah.
The gentleman by the name of Jameson who spent a year traveling the world.
How'd that work out?
To find a sane lender to lend him money, and he couldn't find anyone. So the team stays if the league wants to finance it. But if I'm an owner of another team, let me worry about my team. You go finance your own team.
15 seconds, real quickly. No more surprising series to me, probably to everybody, than the Red Wings and the Blackhawks. Is this Detroit's now to win? I mean, is the expectation now that this really could happen?
Here's what I compare it to. I looked at the series in 97 with Eric Lindros, where he had all the biggest player in the league, the best player in the league, and this little guy named Larionov checked him to submission, and the Red Wings won. This, to me, is the same thing. You've got the most complete player in our game in Datsyuk. And it is all about not skill, but it's all about hockey IQ. This is the smartest player I've ever seen. And when he loses the puck, I've never seen a player work harder to get it back. Because guess what? It's fun playing with the puck. So they are frustrating the Hawks, and I would not be surprised to see Detroit move on.
Have a fun time in Pittsburgh, and we'll talk to you next week. Thanks, Heels.
All right, boys. Enjoy.
Glenn Healy of Hockey Night in Canada. More hockey when we come back. Memorial Cup marches on. The commissioner of the OHL and president of the CHL will join us. A suspension to discuss. Was it warranted? Why was it called? We'll address that with David Branch when Primetime continues on the Fan Radio Network and Sportsnet. Before the hour, as we mentioned, the Memorial Cup marches on. A sudden death game tonight. Saskatoon and London will play. The winner will advance. The loser will be the first eliminated from the Memorial Cup this year in Saskatoon. Camped out, as he has been, I'm sure, for the past week or more. The president of the CHL, the commissioner of the Ontario Hockey League, David Branch, is with us. Hi, David. How you doing?
Doing real well, thank you, Robert. It's great to join you and John once again.
Big game last night for the Saskatoon Blades, who couldn't pull it off. And in the midst of this, lost a significant piece of the puzzle. Defenseman Dalton Thrower was suspended for the remainder of the tournament. We should clarify here that this is not the ultimate decision on this is not made by you or your office or the CHL, in effect. Explain what happens during the Memorial Cup.
Yeah, good point. I mean, when you have three leagues coming together, I mean, you always get into any number of scenarios around important pieces to the game as to, well, you're doing it for this reason because, you know, it could affect another team in the tournament. And so we've called upon the National Hockey League, who for a number of years have provided, a lot of services, shall we say, to us by way of video goal judge review. And they also have a referee supervisor here who appoints the officials to the games. And then this year, for the first time, we gave the NHL Hockey Operations Department the responsibility to look after discipline on ice. And last night's game was the first real event where the NHL had to make an address of a very concerning hit. And I say that in the context that, in our view, it was a hit to the head. And all of us, or most of us, shall I say, certainly share a strong concern about steps to be taken to address that very part of our game. It's so concerning. So the National Hockey League looks after that particular area for us, and we're deeply appreciative. And, you know, for a number of years, it was different types of processes, but we think we've hit upon something here that will serve our collective best interests.
Well, it certainly solves the problem of anybody accusing you as also a commissioner of the OHL of having any conflict of interest, correct?
Well, that's it, John. I mean, people may say, well, what do you mean? Well, it's Saskatoon and Portland playing last night, but I mean, here you have Saskatoon lining up tonight against London, and you know the optics are, hey, you know what, you're not maybe being objective, and it just allows people, and I'm not saying they're wrong, to look at it and say, you know, there's maybe a bias here. So it's removed that, and I think everyone's better for it, the tournament as a whole, and all our teams that are engaged in the competition.
You may not want to comment specifically on this, but I always have a concern when I see a play like last night, where it is adjudicated after the fact that a player committed a serious infraction, serious enough for him to be suspended for the rest of the game, of the series, and yet the referee, who was no more than 15, 20 feet away watching the play, determined it was not a penalty on the ice. How do you deal with that?
Well, I mean, Bob, it happens from time to time, and as much as we may feel that an official is right there, in this instance, the two on-ice referees did not see the hit. They certainly saw the player lying on the ice, but they caucused. Neither of the officials and the linesman saw the contact. And you know what? I mean, it happens from time to time, and that's all I can say. And I think the good thing now with video review and for the good of the game, when there's a serious injury involved, that was the case here, the young fellow from Portland, who, by the way, is a Saskatoon native, for what it's worth, too, you know, and the hardships presented to him and his family. I mean, he's concussed. He's out of the tournament as well. So
no, we all have. I'm sure we do have sympathy for him. Jen, can you run that videotape again? Because I just got an angle. There's an end of the ice angle on the hit that we're going to see, and I know you don't have the ability to watch it now. I got to tell you, David, it really looks like the referee is looking right at the play at the moment of the hit. John, what do you think? Does it look like it?
Well, the faces are certainly laying the pointed in the right direction, but I don't know whether he was following the puck or following the players. So
yeah.
I would suggest that, you know, that I'm not sure that either you or I, Bob, know the responsibility of both officials in a two-man system. That's because I've heard this discussion before, and that's always been the way it's been explained to me.
Well, and I'm not trying to pick on this official or the Memorial Cup or junior hockey at all. I'm saying generically, as we talk about these hits, and 99.9% of them, you would appreciate, David, are related to the National Hockey League, it is astounding to me how many times there is no call on the ice, and yet we wind up with supplementary discipline as a result of the action.
Yeah, I know, Bob, and I can tell you that, first of all, before the tournament started, I mean, you have meetings with the on-ice referees, and you always have certain areas to note. One is hitting to the head. Two is checking from behind. Mm-hmm. You know, three is after whistle scrums and so forth. And they know they have our support and our backing to make those calls. And you know what, Bob, I can remember, you know, I look back now, I can't imagine how we ever got by with one referee on the ice. And quite frankly, I'm not sure two referees are enough. But we know we can't put any more bodies out there. The game is just so fast, so many things going on. And, yes, sometimes they miss the principal point of issue, and in this case, that was the situation.
We're out of time, David. It's been, for the most part, an enjoyable Memorial Cup.
It's the most competitive Memorial Cup I've ever watched. Most competitive.
Yeah. You never know from night to night who's going to emerge.
Stars There's everywhere.
David Branch, the president of the CHL and commissioner of the OHL. Our thanks to him, to Glenn Healy, Pat Gillick for joining us tonight. Thanks to you for watching or listening. See you tomorrow on Pride Time.